We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 243. Scott, we may have a signature Yankees moment alert on our hands tonight.
Oh, we absolutely have a Yankees signature moment alert. There's no doubt about it. Giancarlo Stanton finally comes up in Yankee Stadium, where people have been giving him endless shit because he's been terrible at home. And what does he do? He walks it off. He walks it off after being down 5-0. It was beautiful.
So I'm confused because I've always been under the impression that signature Yankee moments can only happen in October. They cannot happen on June 20th.
It's not a signature Yankee moment per se for like the record books. It's not that. It's his signature Yankee moment to you know, it needs that one. It's the Giambi home run in the rain. It's the it's the first thing you do that gets that W. It's usually a walk-off at home in the pinstripes as a Yankee. That's what it is.
And it's the monkey off your back.
Yeah, he needed it. He absolutely needed it. It's always one of those, you know, when you have a new guy come over, especially a guy that has all the fanfare, he's got to earn it. He's got to earn it for the Yankee fans. He's got to earn it in the Bronx. And tonight was that moment. Tonight was that moment that now people will give him a little bit more slack.
He looked happier than he's been at any point this season, running around those bases, jumping up and down, doing the handoff at third base, getting the Gatorade shower at home. Almost looked like a 16-year-old kid walking into high school after he lost his virginity. That's how happy he was.
I mean, that's the thing. You start playing loose, you start playing happy like that, you're having fun, that's when good things happen. And he's been really, really hitting the ball well over the past few games. So it's really good to see him come around. And for all those hating doubters that say that Giancarlo Stanton was a joke and I can't believe we got him. I mean, he was terrible for the first couple months and his numbers are still there. I mean, they're all still there. That's what's crazy.
It was June 19th of last season when he went to the closed batting stance, and that's exactly where we are at this point. If you look at his numbers as far as home run production, power numbers, it's pretty equal to where he was at this point in the season last year. I mean, he went on that unbelievable run in the second half of the season last year that won him the MVP. Who knows if he's going to do that again? But if we're just doing up until June, middle of June of last year, this is where Stanton was at that point.
No, absolutely. And he's been a slow starter in the past. He's a guy that has tinkered with his stance a number of times. I mean, there's been talk about Boone has said, no, not really. He hasn't changed his stance. It looks like it's a little bit more opened up slightly, you know, not much, but there's a slight difference in the way his legs are positioned, I think. And whatever it is, I don't really care what he does or how he does it. As long as he gets his confidence right and he's able to see the ball and hit the ball, it's going to go, it's going to do damage. And that's what happened today.
I think what we've learned about Stanton is, we're still expecting the run where he goes on maybe 15 homers in a month and he's just the best player in baseball for that span. But I think no matter what, he's always going to have those at-bats that you scratch your head and say, yeah, what the hell happened there?
Right. And, you know, as a fan looking at Stanton from a distance, you don't see those at-bats. You see the highlights.
Right.
You see all the good stuff. You don't see those like those at-bats where like, does this guy play baseball for a living? They're like Chris Carter at-bats sprinkled into very good at-bats.
Right. We only saw the SportsCenter highlights of the 470-foot moon blast.
Exactly. And that's why we all thought Chris Carter was something decent in Milwaukee.
Right. We're going to get into everything that's happened. It's been a busy couple days for the Yankees. Before that, though, just a couple housekeeping notes. On the last second half of this podcast, I spoke to Jim Callis. He is an MLB draft and prospects expert from MLB.com. Got into a lot of draft topics as well as Yankees pipeline stuff. Really fun conversation, so stay tuned for that segment. Also, June 29th, tickets are going fast. The deadline is Sunday, but do not wait because they might be sold out by then. This event is going exactly, selling exactly how we expected it. It's going to be a playoff type game between the Yankees and Red Sox. And these tickets are hot, going fast.
Yeah, I mean, and frankly, they're the cheapest ticket in town, honestly. So if you go anywhere
else, that helps.
It's a good deal. And I have an inventory tracker now on our tickets because we do have a set amount for this particular game. And I want to say we have like, you know, under 30 tickets remaining and then those will go. So, get your, if you're looking for a group still, or if you're trying to get your people together, don't wait because they will be gone most likely, by the weekend. But if they're not, Sunday will be the last day that we're going to accept any sales. I'll take it off the website, late Sunday night. And then we'll start moving forward. All the t-shirts that we got in by the deadline are being printed right now. Some of them are being shipped already, and they're going to be going out. You know, this most of them will be out tomorrow and then on Friday as well. And, you know, people should start getting them over the weekend and early into next week. So that is that's going according to plan. If you have not seen the shirt, check out my Twitter account.
It is hot.
It's pretty dope. It's actually a concept that I had a couple years ago and I never really built it out. And I just kind of was going over ideas in my head and started to rebuild this one out. But it's 27 time heavyweight champion of the world. And that's the premise of the design. So it ended up really cool. I'm happy with it. And I think you guys will be too. So I'm pumped for everybody to get those and see that nice sea of navy blue sitting in 205. We're at like 300 people, by the way.
That's amazing. I cannot wait. And who knows, those 27-time heavyweight champion of the world shirts might only be good for this season and this season only.
Hey, collector's item. That's beautiful. We got to let the Boston, Boston crowd, because you know there'll be some stragglers in the mix. Got to let them remember how many times that our boys have won this championship.
Did you hear Michael Kay on the broadcast tonight talking about how the Yankees from here on out have, I think, the fourth easiest schedule in baseball and the Red Sox have one of the harder schedules in baseball?
I didn't hear him talking about it tonight, but I did know about it. I mean, we've been talking about how the Yankees have been, taking on the harder competition early on, and we're seeing this now. We play the Tampa twice in a week and a half. So, and the Red Sox started off the season with one of the easiest schedules, so it was bound to happen.
Well, the reason I bring it up is because right now the Red Sox are struggling in Minnesota again. They're losing tonight, Wednesday, in the eighth inning. But I still think that despite the difference in schedules, the two teams are going to be there the entire season, and it's going to be those two teams fighting neck and neck to win the division, and whoever wins the 13 games is probably going to win the division. Do you still agree with that, or do you think that schedule might play more of a factor to the Red Sox in the second half?
Well, I mean, I think the Yankees are a better team, first of all. I think they have the edge as far as just the way that the team is going. And honestly, the way that the pitching has lined up lately, even with injuries, you know, the Yankees have shown that they can stay in these games. And I just think the offense is superior, and it's going to be even more. As the season goes on, I think we're really going to see that. I mean, J.D. Martinez is on a freaking tear. And if he cools off for an extended period of time, that offense is in trouble, especially if Betts, isn't back and healthy and contributing. But the 13 games, like you talked about, like obviously those are the most intricate, those are the most important games. So the schedule will come into play, but those 13 games can wipe all of that away. Because if the Red Sox were to come in and beat the Yankees, significant amount of time or significant times within those 13, it changes the whole dynamic of the playoff race.
Right. Yeah, and you mentioned like if J.D. Martinez or Mookie Betts goes into a slump, that could really change the dynamic of that Red Sox lineup. And I think what we've seen with the Yankees, where Sanchez has been in a slump for seemingly the entire month of June, Stanton has not really been hot yet, and the team is still continuing to win games. And maybe, just maybe, Sanchez and Stanton are finally getting going, because Sanchez has been having much better at-bats. He's hitting the ball hard again, or he's been continuing to hit the ball hard, but he's been hitting into bad luck. There was that stat that on Tuesday he lined into the hardest ever.
Yeah, 120 miles per hour.
121.1 miles an hour. Hardest non-ground ball tracked by StatCast, and it was a friggin' out. It's like, what more can you do as a player when you hit the ball the hardest anything has ever been recorded? It's like, you can't aim it sometimes.
Yeah, no, and what was the second one? The one before that was when Judge hit that like low line drive to the wall, right? It was almost a
I believe it was actually a Judge home run against Baltimore last year.
Okay, so the home run must have come after that, because I remember when he hit one, it was either a ground ball or it was a low line drive that ended up rolling to the wall, but it was just a laser, and it was
right.
It was one of the hardest hit balls.
Well, this was a non-grounder.
Got it.
So they I guess ground balls are more commonly hit at 100.
Well, and we've established that Gary Sanchez doesn't hit ground balls well.
Does not hit. He's not a ground ball hitter.
He's not a ground ball hitter.
He's a launch angle kind of guy.
Right. Yeah, got to get that ball up for him.
And he crushed that shot tonight that tied the game in the eighth inning.
Oh, no doubt about it. You can see the smirk on his face. Like, he's like, yeah, you know, I'm feeling it. I'm coming back. The fact that Stanton's coming back in that same game, it was nice to see those two guys. And, you know, sprinkle in some Judge, because he was doing it as well. It's like he's still involved in every game. Whether he's a hero or not, he does his job every single time, man. He's such an impressive player. But, like, you know, getting back to the lineup real quick, like that's the thing. The biggest difference between the Yankees and the Red Sox right now, in when you look at the offense, is yes, the Red Sox can absolutely be hurt if a couple of their guys are not on fire and they're not, you know, driving in runs like they've been. But the Yankees have so many unbelievable players in this lineup that it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter if one or two guys are slumping, and it could be one of their two main guys. It could be one or two of their power hitters. It could be Judge and Stanton, and this lineup could still do damage. That's the huge difference. 1 through 9, you're going to get hurt, and that's a big deal.
Of course, and we have not seen it yet this year. And I'm kind of actually afraid for when we finally do see it, we might have 9-hour ball games on our hands every night.
Yeah, they're going to be long games. There's no doubt about it.
So dating, going back to Monday, the kind of quasi doubleheader, the Yankees split it. First of all, that suspended game didn't even feel real. That kind of felt like a spring training game. We're just thrown into the middle of that sixth inning. Chad Green is starting, quote unquote. He's opening, makes Brian Kenny happy, except for the fact that Juan Soto is just a beast. And in his 10 plate appearances against the Yankees this season, has 3 homers.
Yeah, two of them are off. Or one of them was off Sonny Gray. Was two of them off Sonny Gray?
No, at least one of them was Sonny.
It was the fly ball.
One was Chase Shreve, and then Chad Green.
Yeah, so it was the ball that got up in the wind tunnel in left field for Sonny Gray. But no, the kid's 3 home runs. The kid's definitely done damage. He's impressive. He hits the ball hard to all fields. He's an impressive kid. I'm glad we don't have to play him all the time.
That's what I think I tweeted that out. It's thank God that the Yankees won't have to see him again for another 4 years in interleague play, or maybe a World Series matchup.
Yeah, no, I mean, they have something going for sure in the outfield over there. It's interesting to see what they'll do with, you know, they have this kid, and then with Bryce Harper being a free agent, I still expect him to go back there next year, but we'll see.
He got a little desperate shaving his beard while the Yankees are in town.
I know, right? Yeah.
Look at me, Brian Cashman.
He knew damn well what he was doing when he shaved that beard. He knew damn well that the storyline was going to be there. I'm glad that really it didn't get as much juice as I think he wanted it to, because I think people saw it and you know, kind of brushed it off a little bit.
I think most intelligent baseball fans realize there's no place on this Yankees roster for Bryce Harper. Not that he couldn't help, because that's obvious. He's an all-world type of player. Anytime you add that type of talent to a team, they get better. But where conceivably is he going to fit, both just financially and in the lineup, in the everyday outfield? Where is he going to fit? It's just not feasible.
The thing, and I don't want to spend much time on this, but the thing is with him, is yeah, he can help. I mean, there's no doubt. Like you said, he's an all-world player. But at the same time, you're going to be taking away a guy who's a pretty good player somewhere because to fit him in there, and you're adding this giant contract. And you know what you're adding? You're adding a pain in the ass. Like, he just looks like a pain in the ass. And I really, honestly, like, I don't care how good he is. This team is extremely good. Like, we don't need another guy that's that good to win. This team right now is 100 is better than good. They don't need him at all. So why do we have to deal with an attitude like him? A guy, I don't know. He looks like a pain in the ass to me. He definitely looks like a guy that I would get absolutely sick of.
Yeah. You know who else is a pain in the ass?
Sonny Gray.
Yeah, Sonny Gray. 5+ innings of sweaty mediocrity on Monday.
Yeah, you know, he was you were looking for him to do something a little bit better, and he wasn't bad. But he kept the team in the game. He just, you know, there was no depth. He was falling behind. It seemed like a struggle. It wasn't great.
Imagine if Jonathan Holder didn't pull a Houdini act and escape that. Then instead of 5-plus innings, 2 runs, we're looking at 5-plus innings and 3 or 4 runs. And that's a totally different outlook on Sonny Gray's
start. This is the exact same narrative we had of his last start, because he had the couple pickoffs and then a couple guys caught in the base paths. So this is the exact same narrative we're talking about from the last time he played the Nationals and faced the Nationals. So it's Sonny Gray not being good and he's just getting lucky. Real lucky.
Well, the thing that really frustrates me is we saw him it looked like a laborious, painful activity for him to get through every single batter. And I understand it was like 100 degrees and the humidity was off the charts, but it was still just he was reverting back to the nibble, 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 fall behind, go into deep counts, ton of runners on base. 86 pitches in 5-plus innings. It's just mediocre no matter what way you slice it.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't really know what more to say about this kid, honestly. It's we all know what he is. We all know what he can be. We've seen glimpses of Sonny Gray pitching well. He's just not doing it, and he's just getting too deep. The problem is that he's getting too deep in counts. It's a simple solution. If he's working ahead, he's good. If he's not, he's bad. That's it. There's no in between. It really isn't. I mean, like that's it. He needs to control the strike zone. He needs to get out in front of hitters. If he's not doing that, then he's vulnerable for a whole bunch of stuff. He's getting knocked around. He's throwing the ball over the plate, and he's just he's not the same guy. He's a very different guy when he's behind in the count.
And like I said, Holder totally saved his ass. Sonny Gray owes Holder his paycheck after that performance, and Holder has been unbelievably phenomenal since returning from Scranton. The last time he gave up an earned run was April 6th. It's June 20th. Like, though, that when that stat went out on Monday night, I did a quadruple take. I couldn't believe it.
No, he's absolutely been the story of the pitching staff, I think, so far, because of what he's done out there, and the fact that he started off so poorly and gave up, you know, that what was it? It was in Toronto, right?
Well, he had two of his first three outings of the season. He gave up 3 earned runs.
Right. Yep. And then he went down to Scranton and I think gave up a grand slam or a home run in one of his first starts or one of his first appearances back from being sent down. So he was demoralized, like completely just, you know, zero confidence at that point, and thinking that he blew his one opportunity. He's never going to get back up to the bigs. Like, this is all the things that are going through his head. He finally gets back up. And hasn't done anything wrong since then.
24 and a third innings pitch since he came back up. Only 9 hits allowed, 23 strikeouts, 3 walks, and 3 runs. They were all unearned. And he's allowing, I looked it up, entering tonight, he pitched, I think, 2 1/3 scoreless innings tonight. But entering tonight, he was allowing a 120 batting average against.
Yeah, beautiful. And he just kept coming back out tonight. It's like Shreve kept coming back out, and then Jonathan Holder kept coming back out.
Yeah,
Boone was lazy.
We didn't want to see Shreve come back out, and he kept coming back out. We wanted to see Holder. Like, I would have used Holder in that fourth inning jam after Lois Siga was pulled,
right,
with the runners on base. Like, Holder just proved himself he can pull a Houdini act. And who do you bring in? Chase and Shreve, who has reverse splits. He brings him in to face D. Gordon. I wrote it down. Hold on, let me find it. So against lefties this season, Shreve has a 913 OPS against, and against righties a 787. Both are pretty bad, but 913 against lefties is horrendous. You're using him like he's a lefty specialist, except for the fact that he doesn't get left-handed batters out.
That's a problem, like, for being a lefty specialist.
For a team that is supposed to be analytics forward, well, why are you ignoring those analytics?
Yeah, this is I was really scratching my head when Boone brought him out and then just kept him in. I mean, there was nobody even warming up when he's just getting lit up after he finally closes out the inning. But the thing with Chase and Shreve is that if he's not getting those left-handed batters out, what is the reason he's on this roster? What's the point? I don't get it.
Exactly.
I don't even know why he's taking up a spot at this point if he can't get left-handed batters out.
I think if he threw with his right arm, he would not be on this roster anymore.
Oh, I mean, there's no doubt about it. He would be a very mediocre run-of-the-mill. I mean, you could say that about a bunch of lefties, but yeah, the fact that he's on this roster is because he's lefty. But the thing is, if you're looking at it, like you're saying, he doesn't get lefties out. So there's no point.
You're telling me that Tommy Canley couldn't come up here and get lefties out more efficiently than Shreve is?
I think Tommy Canley, if 100% healthy, if they feel comfortable with him, could absolutely do that. I think David Robertson could absolutely do that.
Right, there's a number of guys, and A.J. Cole didn't pitch for a month. He finally got into a game.
He's been pretty good
Tuesday.
Since he's been in. I mean, he's done nothing wrong either.
I know that, but that's another guy where if he's not going to pitch from May 28th to June 19th, what is the point of taking up a roster spot?
Well, I think A.J. Cole is – I think they might see something in him. I mean, he started off the season as one of the starters in the Nationals.
Him.
But listen, they started off – so the fact that he's still there is they know he is a valuable backup as well because they can use him as a starter if they need to. They can stretch him out to be a starter because that's what he started the season as. And he's been an effective reliever when he's in. So I think they see something there, and that's why they don't want to let him go at this point because they know – you know, he wouldn't be on the team any longer. So
that's all fine.
They would completely lose him if they were to give that up. So yeah, Shreve is the guy.
No, I agree with you on Cole. If they really truly do believe in Cole and see something, then fine. But don't have him sit in the bullpen and not pitch for a month.
Well, the problem is
really a waste. It's a waste. You're telling me that that roster spot couldn't be better served for either a position player or a reliever that actually pitches?
No, my point is what I'm saying is that they if they were to give up that roster spot, they lose the player. It's not like they option him down, but I don't know. Like the situation where he's in right now, he has the ability to decline that, go out in free agency, right? And then probably get on another team, no doubt about it.
Yeah, if they release him,
so that's what would happen.
But right now AJ Cole's on this roster for the emergency situation in case somebody gets injured.
Well, we have
injuries.
There are injuries. That's the thing. Right now they're using a kid from Double A. Like there's no definitive fifth starter right now. So yeah, I think they kind of have to keep a guy like him on so that they can have the ability to bring somebody up. Because look what happened. There was nobody on the 40-man roster to bring up. They had to literally bring a kid from Double A up. So when we're looking at options for fifth starters right now, if however long Tanaka's out, it's pretty thin. So a guy like AJ Cole becomes more valuable because of that.
I just look at they love this 8-man bullpen, and the 7th guy in the bullpen sucks, and that's Chasen Shreve, and the 8th guy in the bullpen didn't pitch for a month. So they need to do something where either get Shreve out of here, start using AJ Cole more, do something, because it's kind of a waste with what they've been doing. That's all I'm saying.
It's Shreve. He's a problem.
Yeah, I think maybe we saw the last of Shreve tonight.
Maybe I wouldn't be surprised if they did, but I have a feeling they won't.
I'm hopeful anyway. Tommy Canley, I saw, was touching upper 90s in Scranton.
I did see that. It was 96. I saw that tweeted out from Scranton. That's good. I mean, he's been with consistency too. He's been hitting the 95, 96. So look, that means he's getting back. I mean, I think that was one of the big reasons he was down there is because he had rehab, but his velocity wasn't where they wanted it to. And that's what he's just working himself through. I think people forget about Tommy Canley and the fact that he's, a dynamic relief pitcher that's just waiting in the wings to come in and bolster this thing even more.
I mean, entering the season, he was going to be the fourth or fifth guy out of that bullpen.
Yeah, no doubt. No, he's an absolute weapon, just waiting there, just salivating. He's a bulldog, too.
That was the guy we were most excited about from that White Sox trade last year. We thought that was going to be the Tommy Canley trade.
Yeah, well, and because he lit it up. I mean, he was very good last year. So I think he's got something to prove. He seems like a guy that really doesn't like to go out there and not do well in front of people. It seems like he's a prideful guy and wants to do real well. So I have a lot of confidence in him coming back and being effective.
Couple other injury and roster notes. So we have El Rojo Red Thunder back on the roster. Ronnie Toto was sent down. And with Gardner's knee kind of still barking, he's still day-to-day, although they're not DLing him. That means Clint Frazier's getting some playing time.
I think he took some swings today. He was in the cage doing something.
Dry swings?
Dry humping the swings. And it seems like he's working his way back. It's one of those lingering things that it'll be healthy when it's healthy. So I wouldn't be surprised if we saw something retroactive also.
Right, because the last time he played was Saturday.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me, especially if they got into a roster pinch.
and they could retroactive DL him, and it's only a 10-day DL, so you're really only DLing him for like 5 days, and then that way you could call back Ronald Torres and not have to play with a two-man bench, essentially.
Options. Lots of options.
Yeah.
You don't really hearing much about not many people complaining that Torres got sent down again this time. The roar from the fans, the outrage was a lot smaller this time.
Well, do you know why that is?
Because it had already happened. People have already been accustomed to it, and they're winning.
No, because it was Clint Frazier, and everyone loves Clint Frazier.
It's a little of both. I mean, you know, once you do it one time, it's like, okay, it's already happened. I'm done being upset. They're still good.
Although the last one was for Greg Bird, and everyone loves Greg Bird too. So who
do
knows?
They? I guess. Does everybody love Greg Bird? Are you sure about that?
Everyone likes the idea of Greg Bird.
I think people are getting fed up with Greg Bird. I think people have been fed up with Greg Bird. People roll their eyes at Greg Bird, and then he does well, and they're like, oh, yes, that's the guy that everybody, the best hitter in the organization that we've been hearing about for years. Like, you know, that's the guy. That's the guy people are excited about. But I think people roll their eyes when they hear about Greg Bird still.
So Bird came up the weekend of our last event, May 26th. He's been up for whatever, about a month now. He has not been hitting consistently, but he's not injured. So that's a plus.
That we know
at
of.
Least
he's, no,
at
he's
least
not.
He's out, he's, at least he's out there playing every day. I'm confident that he will get his rhythm and his swing back. It's just going to take some time. Do you remember last year he came back up in September and he didn't start hitting immediately? It took him until the end of September and into October before he got into a rhythm.
Yeah, I mean, I really hope it. I really do hope it comes. I hope the guy, can find that rhythm and be that pure hitter, because I think it's such a big spot when you sandwich a guy in there who can get on base a lot and has pop in that three spot. You know, it especially if he's a lefty, it really really changes the dynamic of that lineup. I mean, if Didi's hitting well and he's in a three spot too, it's you're getting similar production at that way, especially the way Didi has been this year in the three spot when he's hot. But, you know, Bird's that guy. So it's just a matter of if he can actually fill the shoes that everybody thinks he, you know, if he could be the guy that everybody wants him to be.
Right.
It hasn't happened yet at all.
It's just still the potential.
I'm still waiting for your MVP. That's what I'm still waiting for. I'm waiting for this MVP guy to show up.
Well, he was my X factor in 2016 and he was my MVP in 2017.
And what is he now?
He is my nothing.
He is my nothing.
I've moved on to bigger and better things. I will jinx other people. I have done Greg Bird dirty enough.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounded bad.
Yeah.
Herman has continued to impress. Tuesday, 7 innings, only 2 hits allowed, 2 runs, only 1 earned, 9 strikeouts. The defense kind of bit him in the first inning where they had that error. Didi had that error, and then Andujar couldn't handle the line drive that allowed Gordon to score. So realistically, he could have just been on that one-run performance on Tuesday night.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think that's such a key thing to look at too. I mean, we've seen him get hit around early in the starts, and he's kept his composure and has continued to pitch well into the rest of the game. And I think, you know, this was a little bit of a different situation in the sense that it wasn't really him that was doing the damage. The defense hurt him, but yet he still kept his composure and pitched well, pitched deep into the game, 7 innings, only gave up 2 hits. Like, that's ridiculous. And still has that high strikeout total. He's had a high strikeout total pretty much in every single one of his outings. Like, he's still missing bats. Every single time he's out there, he's missing bats. And, you know, he's been really, really impressive. And I think the numbers, when you're looking at the earned runs and the runs, they're deceptive, because I think they don't tell the full story of who he actually is. He's really been good. And I'm excited for him long term. I think he's going to be around for a while.
I think his ERA and that kind of thing will start to normalize and come down. And you and I were kind of early adopters of Herman, because we were looking at some of these swings and miss stuff, which I think is very telling. And seeing that, well, the results aren't there, but the stuff is there, and it's just going to take time, because he is a rookie and he is filling in for somebody who's injured. So let's give him a second to try and figure it out. And he's figuring it out.
He is, and you can see the confidence coming too. I think that's one of the bigger things. When you're a young guy and you're stepping into a role like that on a very good team, when everybody around you is doing well or is a, you know, all-star caliber player at this point, like, there's some pressure. There's a lot of pressure to go in there and, you know, to at least keep your team in the game and get some depth. And I think we're seeing a guy that you know probably felt that early in the games when his first few starts, and it seems like he's settling into the role and realizes that this is his slot now. I mean, he's going to be in the rotation for the rest of the season, and you know this is his spot. So get comfortable and, do your thing, and I think that's what we're seeing.
Especially now because they have two rookies in the rotation with Herman and Loesiga. And what we saw from Loesiga tonight was a lot of pitches early in that game. He got beat on the couple of infield grounders in the first inning, just a ton of base runners. He was kind of nibbling. And we never saw him settle in like we saw him do his last time out. But similar to Herman, where he's going to go through these growing pains as a rookie just being introduced to the major leagues, I think they're going to continue to give him shots at the rotation. Like, I don't think this was Loesiga's last start.
Well, no, so, there's nobody else.
there are other
there's
people.
AJ Cole could go in there and do that. I mean, yeah, they could make arrangements. They could make some moves, but right now, absolutely. And I mean, this is not the same situation as Domingo Herman, because Herman has been up before. I mean, he's been in the big leagues for, you know, short spurts. Like, this kid came from Double A. This is a big jump. This is a huge deal. So, you know, it's so natural for this kid to come out there and be a little off and fire a little off. And today you could really see it, I think. It didn't seem like he really got into that. He never really got into the game. He was missing with his fastball. And similar to the first outing, he wasn't missing by much. I mean, that fastball was just on the outside black. And he wasn't getting the call. He wasn't getting that low strike. And, you know, he just continued to fall behind hitters and just really never got into that groove. And I think in the first inning was a little fortunate, you know, had the first two runners on, and then there was a hard hit ball up the middle that was turned into a double play. So they were positioned well to get him out of that inning. But we're seeing that same thing for the first two outings, right? Like, he's been in trouble, but then also gotten out of them, out of the innings really unscathed at that point, until his final inning. But we're going to see improvements from him, I think. He's a young dude. We got to be patient with him.
Yeah, he's a baby. He looks like a baby out there, and you just realize how raw he is. So it's kind of crazy that this is where the Yankees are at this point in the season with two rookies out of the five starting rotation.
And they're winning. That's the thing. Like, they have some rope. They have some leeway to let these guys kind of get into their groove. And that's such a an advantage to other people, because this offense is so damn good and they're really never out of a game no matter what. And honestly, the fact that there really aren't better options at this point, there's you know, go out there and do your thing. They're really, while there is pressure to perform internally, I'm sure, for these guys, like, the organization at this point and Boone, I can, you know, there's not a ton of pressure on him right now. He's just got to go out and do it because he's the guy.
Well, I think what fans are going to be saying is, why aren't the Yankees making a move on the trade market right now to fill that rotation out? And we saw maybe one of the first dominoes fall, where the Nationals traded for Kelvin Herrera from Kansas City. Obviously, it's a good thing that the Astros didn't acquire him. I think the Astros are in the market for some bullpen help. But maybe that's the first sort of trade hot stove domino to fall on this year's market.
Yeah, and I'm still hearing there's still a lot of chatter about Ja Happ. This is I have a feeling that's going to be that's not going to go away anytime soon. I feel like he's going to be one of those guys that they're going to be going after, because I'm just afraid that, you know, some of these top name guys, one, are not realistic, and then two, you know, if they are offered up, they're going to be asking for too much. The problem with the Yankees is in right now, and they're going to be at the end of the season. We've talked about this in the past. Is that they can't protect all these guys. So something's going to have to give at some point, whether it's in the middle of the season, after the season. But, you know, they have the assets. It's just a matter of if they're willing to give them up for some of these. It's nobody on the Mets, because I just don't expect that to happen. But I'm talking about a guy like Cole Hamels. If you want it for a rental, to give up some of your top young guys for a guy like Cole Hamels, is it worth it?
Well, I actually talked to Jim about Cole Hamels and who the Yankees might have to trade to acquire him. So, and you're not going to like his answer.
I know. It's going to be too much. I can already expect it. But, yeah, that's the thing. Is it right? Worth it? You have to look at the risk-reward now, and to see if a guy like Cole Hamels is actually going to make that much of a difference at this point in his career, and the fact that you're going to have to give up somebody substantial to get him. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
All these teams are going to be asking for a lot right now, even for not even starters for bullpen help. Because I was actually talking to Frank about this on our live chat on Tuesday night, is that there were rumors that the Padres were asking for Devers from the Red Sox for Brad Hand.
That's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. But if that's their asking price, like, go screw yourself. Like, we're good with what we have, because you cannot pay that price for a bullpen arm.
No, because you got guys like Jonathan Holder who get lit up and then go down to get sent to Scranton and then come out and then are you know, dominant from April 6th. Like, bullpen arms can show up out of nowhere too. That does happen. It happens a lot.
And they
actually
can go away. They can go away in a blink of an eye.
Yeah. So, you know, unless you're talking about one of the, you know, like a top closer that has a long track record that you can rely on and see what he's done for a while, it's really hard to give up something like that. And I don't know enough about the guy in San Diego. I know he's a good player. I don't know enough about him to even talk about what kind of a prospect to give up for him at this point, though.
Yeah,
I mean, they're certainly not going to. To me, that's they're going to be asking for too much. I mean, the market was set a couple years ago with Chapman and all that. You saw the bounties that were going out for what we got for Miller and Chapman. The Yankees did that. They set a pretty good precedent for whoever the top reliever is on the market at that point.
But what they received for Chapman and Miller were players that were not helping the Cubs and the Indians that season. You're not going to trade away a player that's going to help you win a World Series now for another player that's going to help you. You're going to trade away a guy that's in your minor league system. You're not going to take off your major league roster to add to your major league roster. That's counterproductive.
Oh, no doubt. And you're talking about Devers, you mean? Yeah, I mean, there's...
If you're for the Red Sox, for Devers, correct.
That makes no sense. Makes no sense. I mean,
like,
it's a high...
Would the Padres ask for Andujar? Like,
yeah,
hell no.
Possibly. That's probably who they'd ask for. You're right. That's probably who they'd ask for. Yankees are in a weird situation with Andujar and Drury, if Drury ever does come up, even though we're seeing now that he's playing first base every other game or a couple games a week, he's going to be playing first base in Scranton. So that's interesting. It'll be definitely interesting to see how the Yankees feel about that third base spot and if they actually feel that they can give up somebody in a trade because of that depth. But I think there's so many questions around Drury, question marks around Drury and his health at this point, that it's hard to rely on a guy like that if you were to go out and trade Andujar.
Right. Upcoming, Yankees have getaway day against the Mariners on Thursday. Severino versus Paxton. It's probably Seattle's best starting pitcher. And then the Yankees go to Tampa for 3 down at the lovely Tropicana Field.
Can't wait to watch those beautiful games on television. That's one of the better games to watch on television.
Nothing the like AstroTurf summer baseball. Beautiful. Summer June baseball in that dingy, dusky looking place of the Tropicana Field.
Oh, the field is like glowing. It looks radioactive on television. It's awful.
Everything's gray.
Yeah, except for the grass or the turf that's like neon green.
Yeah. So like I said, stay tuned. I talked to Jim about a ton of stuff in the draft and the prospects. Scott, any last words before we close this thing out?
Yeah, I just want to reiterate the voicemail line. We're getting this thing back up. We said that I think on the last Sunday show, we just got to get those calls in. So start using it again. Let's get this voicemail going. We put out a tweet. We're going to try to be better about putting those tweets out to remind you guys, but plug it in your phone and just have it in there so that if something does happen, if you got something to say, give us your best, 20 to 30 seconds. Don't talk for a minute because we just will cut it out. It's too damn long sometimes. Just go hard for 30 seconds. That's the best. Go hard for 30 seconds. I don't care what you say. Just go hard for 30 seconds.
That's all you need.
646-480-0342. I got voicemails coming in right now as I'm talking, so that's good. We will absolutely have them up on Sunday's episode, so let it up.
Beautiful. Stay tuned for Jim Callis. We'll talk to you guys in a few days. Joining us on the podcast now is MLB draft and prospect expert Jim Callis. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Oh yeah, glad to be here.
Busy time of year for you.
It is. It's starting to slow down. I think we're finally getting the signings to slow to a little bit more of a trickle. So after preparing for the draft and then dealing with all the signings, I feel like I finally can catch my breath just a little bit, although you know, we'll start revamping all of our top 30 prospects list and our overall top 100 list in July, so it won't be too much of a slowdown.
Yeah, for you, because the MLB draft is unlike any other draft, where the players are not as well known. There's 40 rounds, there's hundreds and hundreds of players, and then, like you just talked about, revamping all of the team's top 30. How do you keep track of all of this? Well, how many people are on the team that are compiling all these lists?
Well, three of us do the list. It's me, Johnson Mayo, and Mike Rosenbaum. So we each have 10 teams we do that for. For the actual draft preparations and all the draft commentary, it's Jonathan and myself. So we kind of split the country in half and divide it up geographically and go from there. But, yeah, you know, I always feel like I'm not lose sight, but I'm not quite on top of the minor leagues as much as I like to be this time of year, because I've been dealing with the draft so much, and now the pendulum starts to swing back.
Do you think because the players that come through the baseball draft don't see the major leagues for a number of years in a lot of cases, do you think that's why the draft is not as popular as it is in, say, the NFL or basketball?
Yeah, no, I think that there is some truth in that. You know, I also think college baseball, while I love it, you know, and some of these guys drafted out of high school, isn't as popular as college football or college basketball. So you aren't seeing, unless you go seek them out, these guys aren't on national TV, you know, on a weekly basis. Although, that said, I think the NHL draft is probably the most comparable to the baseball draft, and they get, like, you know, 10,000 fans at their draft. I mean, the teams do a good job of, you know, they rotate around to the various cities, and the teams really promote it well. So I think you could create, you know, more interest. I think MLB's, you're looking for ways to do that. But I think that's definitely it. You just don't know the players, and they aren't going to make an impact on your big league club. So if you're more of a casual fan, I think you can kind of take it or leave it a little bit.
Right, and with college baseball, the College World Series is going on right now. Unless you're a baseball fan, you would not really know that. It's not on nationally televised games, CBS having all-day marathons and all that stuff like you get with March Madness. So it's certainly not as high profile.
No, it isn't. Although I will say, the College World Series is still my favorite event of all the events I cover in baseball. And anybody who gets a chance to go to that, it's actually pretty accessible. It's not hard to get tickets. Omaha's a great city, a great host for the event. I cannot recommend that event enough, because not only is it good baseball and you're seeing, you know, eight teams leaving it all out in the field every day as they try to win the national championship, you're going to see, you know, very good players who are going to wind up being big league stars. I remember seeing Buster Posey at the College World Series, Aaron Nola at the College World Series, you know, Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens play at the College World Series. I think there's something like four or five Hall of Famers now who were in the College World Series. And it's just a tremendous, tremendous event. I can't recommend enough.
What are your thoughts about possibly moving the draft to be all-inclusive, so international players as well, which it right now does not include? Because a lot of the top players, a lot of the top prospects in all of these team systems come from overseas.
Yeah, I don't like that idea. I thought we were headed towards international draft with this last CBA, and I think the owners got something that's even more favorable. We're a system that really clamps down on bonuses, which, I mean, to be honest, I mean, everybody talks about competitive balance, but that's the real reason anybody wants to draft, is to eliminate the, you know, negotiating power with multiple teams for these guys. But I just think it would be too much apples and oranges. I think international draft on its own would be very difficult to administrate. I think we still could have one down the road, but I think combining the two drafts would just be a giant mess. At least this way, you know, you can kind of focus on the draft is toward the beginning of June. And then the international signings are in July. I mean, as you know, if you cover the Yankees and all the prospects they sign, everybody already knows where all the top prospects are going to sign, because those deals get set in place. But I just think if you had an international draft combined with the amateur draft, it would just be a giant mess to administrate. And I think just administrating an international draft on its own would be difficult as well.
But don't you think it could get rid of some of the chicanery that we see with teams manipulating the pool money and on all that kind of stuff that we've seen teams get penalized for?
Well, we've only seen a couple teams get penalized. And no, I mean, I don't know if it would necessarily eliminate that. I mean, I guess it would definitely eliminate everybody agreeing to deals with players months in advance, which you're not supposed to do because you wouldn't know who you're going to get drafted. But I think you'd be pushing some international players up higher in the amateur draft if you combine them than teams would want, because they'd be paying a lot more for them. I mean, the slots at the top of the draft are much more than you could pay an international player. I think teams that do a good job at both would feel like they're being penalized because you wouldn't be able to get as many players. But no, I mean, if the Braves are going to cheat and sign guys to under the table bonuses so they won't get, you know, limited what they can do in the future, I think they probably would have cheated under, you know, an international draft system if that opportunity existed. You know, the Red Sox got caught doing package deals, which I think a lot of teams actually do that. Or I shouldn't say. I think they are. They're not the only team that does package deals, but it was somewhat blatant because it was a year where they couldn't sign players for more than I think $300,000 because they'd gone over the year before, and yet they were signing players for $300,000 who should have commanded more money. So it was kind of obvious. But I think you'd still have. It would still be kind of like the Wild Wild West down there, where anything goes. It would just be a different framework.
And then I guess you'd throw the monkey wrench in all of this would be the Japanese players, like we just saw with Otani coming over, and we've seen with big name players like Tanaka, who had to have a posting fee. If they could not enter the draft because their teams wouldn't release them, then that would create, I guess, a whole other mess.
I don't know if you'd ever have an international draft where it would include players who are in countries that have their own leagues, because it would just be too different.
Right.
I think the draft would be more for amateurs, and the Otanis and Tanakas would get treated more, you know, like some form of free agency.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about the Yankees draft. They caught everybody's attention drafting Anthony Seager in the first round, mainly because he is a switch hitting catcher, but also a switch pitcher. So could you just talk a little bit about him and, I guess, his talent level, considering he can do all of that different stuff on the field?
Yeah, you know, he's interesting. I mean, everybody knows about the switch pitching, and I write, I mean, every time I write about the guy, I mention, I basically write some version of, hey, he's a switch hitter and he's a switch pitcher, but he's also a pretty talented guy, too. He's a very athletic catcher. I mean, some guys even think the tools for profile at second base, if you want. You know, think kind of like an Austin Barnes type of catcher. You know, he moves really well behind the plate. He's got a solid arm and gets rid of the ball pretty quickly. I think you're feeling pretty good. You know, with his athleticism, he'll be a good pitch framer. You know, switch hitter, good line drive swing. You know, I don't think it's going to be big power necessarily. I think it's more of a line drive, you know, hit for average than a power guy. But, I mean, this is a catcher. You know, he's probably close to an average runner, too, which is better than most catchers. I mean, so this is a guy who could help you offensively and defensively.
The whole – obviously a lot of players in prep school and high school pitch and hit because they're just more talented than most of the players at that level. Do you think, though, with Otani – and I know now he's hurt, so it might change things. But if Otani works out and he can do both, do you think we'll see teams start to draft for players that can do both?
I don't. I think last year was kind of a weird year where you had Brendan McKay got drafted that way by the Rays. You know, Hunter Green had two-way talent, but you know, you can't play shortstop and pitch because it takes too much of a toll on your arm. Nick Prado was also another first-round pick who was a two-way guy. But I don't. I just think it's too hard to do one, and it's even harder to do both, you know, and keep a guy healthy as well. I mean, Brendan McKay is pitching really well in the minors. I think he's actually on the DL with an oblique injury now. And you know, but he's not hitting that great either. And I think there are very few guys who have superstar potential both ways. And unless that's the case, you know, I just think you're asking too much.
So let's move on to some Yankee prospect talk right now. A lot of Yankee fans are very involved with what's going on in the Yankee system because of what Brian Cashman has done over the last year to 2 years, turning the system into one of the best in the league. But with Gleyber Torres now in the majors, he was the Yankees' top prospect. Who do you see as their number one guy in the system?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we kind of shift our lists around as the season goes. You know, as Torres graduates, he comes off the list. And so right now, the number one prospect on our list is Esteban Florial. You know, and we'll revamp our lists and add the draft guys in July. You know, but Florial's out right now with a hamate injury. You know, he's got great tools. He's got swing and miss concerns. So, I mean, I think you can answer that question one of two ways right now. I think if you want to go on pure ceiling, it would be Florial, because I mean, you're talking about a guy who, if he hits, it could be plus power, well above average speed, well above average arm, center fielder. That's pretty exciting. I think if you wanted to factor floor in a little bit more and mitigate risk, I think you could argue that Justice Sheffield, you know, maybe his ceiling isn't as high as Floreal's, but he's got a better chance of reaching his ceiling, which is a number three starter. And he's been pretty consistent throughout his career. So I think you could argue that one either way. And I do our Yankees list, and I really haven't thought about that going forward because we're still doing draft stuff, and I'll start to have to think about that in July. I don't know. I'm really intrigued by Floreal, but, you know, I mean, there are big swing and miss concerns there. You know, so I guess if you asked me right now, I would probably lean towards putting Sheffield slightly ahead of him. I think Floreal's 37th on our top 100 now, and Sheffield's number 40 on our top 100, which is our preseason list minus guys who graduated like Torres and Otani and everybody else. That's an interesting call. I mean, the guy who's I wouldn't put him number one. I mean, Luis Medina is the probably most exciting guy. His stuff sounds crazy with a fastball up to 102 with life and curveball with high spin and a split change. Now he's raw and he's in rookie ball and he doesn't throw a lot of strikes, but he might be the best one of them all if they can polish him up.
Floreal really shot up their boards last year, and so much so that I think they were comfortable trading Blake Rutherford to the White Sox. But what makes Floreal, like, what about him? You sort of talked about his ceiling, but what happened over the last year that really shot him up the prospect boards?
I think he's always had these tools. I think it's just that he got to full season ball last year. And then people kind of got to see more of him because you just don't see, when you're in complex leagues or rookie ball or whatever, I just don't think the spotlight's on you. But he was in the fall league last year. He was in low class A. This is a guy who was one of the best prospects in the 2014-15 international period, but he kind of, under the radar is not the right way to put it. But he had a birth certificate issue, an identity issue. He got barred for signing for a year, and so he just kind of got forgotten about a little bit before signing for $200,000. So I think because he wasn't a big money player and he wasn't in full season ball, like he just wasn't on a lot of people's radars. But I mean, his raw power and speed and arm strength are all huge, huge tools. He just needs to make consistent contact to be what he can be.
Where would Clint Frazier rank in their system if he still had eligibility?
That's a good question because he's like in that kind of limbo of, he's not officially a prospect by our definition anymore because he's got too much service time in the big leagues. But at the same time, he's far from established big leaguer. I'd almost be tempted. I'd probably be tempted to put him number one, to be honest. I do think, there needs to be some polish there as well. But, the guy's torn up AAA, this year when he's been there. I think he'd probably be number one, but I think it'd be a close discussion. If Floreal, and it's a big if Floreal reaches his potential, he's the best guy. But there is a lot more risk with him. So I'd probably go Frazier number one.
And you sort of mentioned Medina as a guy who's in low A ball, so we might not see him anytime soon. But the Yankees have done a good job of bringing up pitchers. We've seen Herman come up this year and really contribute. Loaiza, who only had one start, but he looked impressive in his one start. Who are some other pitchers we might see in the next year to year and a half that might make an impact?
Yeah, Sheffield's one. I think Albert Abreu is a guy who could start to move quickly. He's in high A right now, but he's got a really, really good arm. He looked tremendous in the Arizona Fall League. He had the best start anybody I saw in the Arizona Fall League last year. And he can hit 100, and he's got a power breaking ball and a pretty good changeup. Chance Adams, probably not a frontline role, but Chance Adams, even though he's not put up the numbers in AAA, is a guy who could be up. Domingo Acevedo's in AA. He's not too far away either. I think we could see Dylan Tate in a potential. I'm suspecting he might wind up as more of a reliever. They're still developing him as a starter. Trevor Steffen's a guy they took in the third round last year. He's already up in Double A and pitching well. Cody Carroll was the best relief prospect in the Fall League last year. I think he's another guy. You've seen Giovanni Gallegos up and down a little bit. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if a guy like Trevor Lane, who's a lefty reliever, you know, maybe makes a move pretty quick. I thought Ben Heller was a guy who could have helped, but he had Tommy John surgery. So I mean, they have a lot of arms who could help them in the very near future.
Miguel Andujar has come up and I think exceeded some people's expectations, although a lot of people said he could hit. Has he exceeded your expectations so far?
Yeah, I mean, maybe slightly. I mean, I don't know if I would have expected him to come up and hit 290 right away, but, you know, I mean, I knew he had a good bat. I knew he had impressive power. I think there were more questions about him, you know, defensively. I don't think the defensive metrics love him. I mean, but, you know, he's maybe, you know, hitting slightly better than I thought. But, I mean, this is a guy, you know, if you told me he was going to play every day, I could have seen him hitting, you know, 260, you know, 260 or so with 20 homers, and he's on pace to do a little bit better than that. But I mean, very talented guy. I mean, you kind of say the same thing about Gleyber Torres. Like, I think Gleyber Torres is going to batting championship one day, and I knew he was talented, but I think he was going to come up and immediately start hitting like at a 40 home run pace. No, I did not. So I knew both these guys were good. So they probably exceeded my expectations a little bit. You know, just like, I mean, Aaron Judge last year. I mean, look, I thought Aaron Judge could hit for power. I didn't think he was going to hit 50-something home runs as a rookie.
Right. So that sort of hitting for power as you enter the major leagues has been a topic that we've talked about on this show recently. And we've seen guys do it. I mean, even Gary Sanchez came up and hit more home runs than he did in the minors. Why do you think that is a pretty common occurrence? And what are some other guys maybe not on the Yankees around the league that you've seen that happen with as well?
Well, I mean, I think the game has definitely shifted to a power over hit. Like, a lot of guys are swinging for power. And, like, with the Yankees, I mean, I do think Sanchez was always a power over hit guy. I think Aaron Judge was always a power over hit guy. I think Andujar was more of a power over hit guy. I think Torres is the exception. You know, obviously, Yankee Stadium's a great place to hit. I mean, Cody Bellinger was another guy who was a power over hit guy. But again, I don't think anybody saw him coming up and doing what he did last year. So, I just think that's the way the game is going on. I mean, Paul DeJong, you know, with the Cardinals is another guy, you know, who was a power over hit guy. But I just think the game is so geared to power, and I mean, it just seems like now, you know, I think it gets, you know, everybody uses free, but you know, this launch angle revolution. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you have guys, you know, if you're trying to pitch at the bottom of the strike zone and a guy, you know, has a swing with loft and he barrels the ball, you know, it's just tailor-made for hitting home runs. So I just think that's kind of what baseball's become.
And with Gleyber Torres, like you said, he was not a power over hit guy. So the fact that he does still have that hit tool and is now hitting for power makes you maybe have to reevaluate what his potential ceiling could be.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about that. I mean, I guess if he's really a 40 home run hitter, yeah, it would. But I mean, I thought this was a guy who could win batting titles and hit 25 plus homers a year. So the ceiling was already off the charts. Maybe he trades some power, you know, some average for some power. But I mean, that guy's going to be a superstar. You know, no doubt in my mind.
Another guy from that Gleyber Torres trade is Billy McKinney, who we saw for about a day in the majors before getting hurt. He's back healthy now. What do you see for Billy McKinney?
Well, I mean, in New York, I think he's a fourth outfielder because he's not going to move Judge or Stanton off a corner. He's okay. I don't see the guy as an everyday player on a contending club. You know, maybe he's more of a second division regular. I think he can hit. I know he's struggling a little bit this year in AAA. He's had some injuries in his minor league career, but like, I mean, to me, he's the type of guy, he can hit for some average, he can hit for some power. I don't know if he's going to do either one to a great extent. I mean, if you played him every day, he might be a 260, 15 to 20 homer guy on a corner. And I just don't know if that's, you know, like, that's not a first division regular. But, I mean, he is talented, but I think he's kind of one of those guys who's going to be more of a complimentary player than a guy you're going to stick in your lineup and play every day.
And especially on this Yankees roster for the outfield, it's extremely deep, like we just talked about Clint Frazier. So I would expect the Yankees to package some of these guys at the trade deadline.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't think you're going to get a ton for Billy McKinney. I mean, he's, you know, 23... And like I said, I mean, you know, he can hit for some average of power, but like I don't know if you're putting any pluses on him. So I mean, to me, Billy, you know, I know he's a former first round pick. I don't think he's, you know, it was interesting. You know, he was really developing nicely. You got traded by the Cubs to the A's, and then he got hurt in the Cubs system, and you know, he's been okay at times. You know, he's been good at times since, but like hasn't really sustained it to the same degree. You know, to me, if you're making a blockbuster trade, you're Billy McKinney's the third or fourth player in the trade. He's not, you know, the guy you're building the trade around.
Right. Does Clint Frazier get you one of the top pitching arms at the deadline, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think a guy like that would be very interesting. I mean, there's still a lot of upside there. Yeah, I mean, he could. I mean, again, I mean, it's, you know, if you're talking about Cole Hamels, I don't think, you know, it's just going to be Clint Frazier for Cole Hamels. But, you know, the Yankees, I mean, with a loaded big league team and a loaded system, especially in terms of pitching depth, they can afford to give up good players to go out and get what they get. You know, kind of like how, you know, the way they got Gleyber Torres. I mean, that's how the Cubs were. I mean, the Cubs had, you know, probably the best group of young position prospects I've ever seen in 30 years covering this stuff. And they, look, the Cubs knew Gleyber Torres was going to probably be a future star, but they needed Aroldis Chapman. You know, they had Addison Russell. They had Javi Baez. You know, they had Ben Zobrist playing second. You know, they had Ian Happ coming. And so they made the decision, look, you know, it hurts to give up Gleyber Torres, but we've got a lot of middle infield types, and we can do it. So I think, you know, the Yankees are in that position, too, where, I mean, they have the ammunition, and the big league club is so loaded, too, that you don't have spots to play all these guys.
Yeah, that Gleyber Torres trade for Chapman was, I think, going to go back in history, and Yankees fans are going to love that forever. But I've heard some people talking about that there should be a penalty if you re-sign the player you traded away. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't see why that is. I mean, you know, if you had some kind of illegal agreement that, like, hey, you're definitely coming back here,
right,
like, maybe. But no, I mean, I think at the time of the trade, everybody speculated. I shouldn't say everybody, but there was a lot of speculation that the Cubs were renting him. They weren't, you know, the Cubs weren't going to believe in paying a closer big money on a free agent contract, and that there was a very good chance he was going to wind up back with the Yankees. So I don't think... I don't think it needs to be penalized at all.
Well, Jim, thanks very much for joining, and we're looking forward to those new rankings coming out soon.
Yeah, I need to get on those. I'm looking forward to them, too.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.